Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation that I'm hoping helps your business grow. All right. Do you know an inventor? Because I do. That's who we're going to talk to today on the show today. But when I think of an inventor, I usually think of a mad scientist, a Willy Wonka, maybe someone who's off toiling away behind closed doors, making tomorrow's future better for all of us. I think I actually did a pretty good job of describing today's guest, who's also a good personal friend of mine, and I'm just happy that we got him on the show. His business is also one of the top Kansas City startups on Startup Hustle's 2021 list. Now, with me today, I've got John Bouchard, and John's the CEO and founder of Tesseract Ventures. Go to tesseractventures.io and learn more about what they're doing. There's a link for that in the show notes. I guess I should just go ahead and get right into it and say, John, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Boy, am I happy to be here. Happy to see you, Matt DeCourcy.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. And, you know, I, as most people that listen to the show know, I normally like to dive right in by asking my guests a little bit about their backstory. So, John, you know, I think you're like me, and you're one of those people that probably gets asked what you do, and there's like 10 different versions of it. They're all based on the same truth and reality. And that's sometimes right. It depends on how creative or excited I am. But John, what's your backstory?
Well, I grew up in Kansas City. I went to high school here. My brother and I and my sister, I have an identical twin. And even my wife, we all grew up here in Kansas, went to high school here in Kansas. And then college. I left Kansas City in 1999 to make my way out to the West Coast to work for a very special individual. His name was Stan Lee. A super, super unique job in research and development with him. In California, it was quite an interesting change from coming from Kansas, but I really liked Southern California and the opportunity there. I remembered at the time, back in the late 90s, that I didn't think it was the right time to start a high technology company. It wasn't the right time back then. It is now, actually, now with Tesseract, but back then it wasn't the right time, and I decided to really, pick up a unique career. So that was very special. Started my company in California and ultimately sold the first company called Infinite. Worked for a company called Evolution Robotics, which was a very unique company at Idea Lab, and that company ultimately got sold to iRobot. I started Tesseract Ventures 3 years ago back in Kansas City, and it was a very important decision on how to start that business, but I'm happy to be back in my hometown to kick some ass.
Well, and you're definitely doing that, and you know, I've known you for several years at this point. Now, let me back up a little bit, because you know, you have a tendency of breezing past, okay, Stan Lee, that's like, like the X-Men, Marvel, like all that, iRobot, Roomba.
Co-creator.
Yeah. So some of that, well, you know, now originally you kind of started in the world of toys.
Yes, yes, yes. That's a very unique industry. Yeah, the toy business is a super unique industry. It's very small, and the most unique piece of that business is that the toy industry has a mechanism to deal with outside innovation. So they really do have a series of business mechanisms where you could option and ultimately license ideas, technology, trade secrets, you know, method, etc. Sometimes it's just, I've seen deals go down in the craziest ways in that industry, but they do have a innovation licensing mechanism to do business. And I've always loved that camaraderie in that group. But it's part of Tesseract, I imagine, that type of creativity, the business that we have now.
So what's something, working with a guy like Stan Lee and seeing someone like that regularly, if he's kind of your Charles Xavier, like the like the real life version. So what did you learn? What's a takeaway you got from being in that school of the gifted?
Yes, yes. What a great, wow, you're a Marvel man, I can tell.
I'm trying hard.
Make mine Marvel. Yeah, Stan Lee, it was an exceptional storyteller in the greatest sense of the word. And that's one of the things I really learned from him, to how to tell a story and to capture people's attention and take them through a really wonderful story with background of character and story arc and the highs and lows of how to tell a wonderful story. And so I did learn that from him. I also really learned a unique method. He used something called the Marvel method, which was, he had a complete bullpen of artists. You know, he was a writer. So he had this unique method where he could translate these ideas into real stories that were visual and captured people's attention too, very much like what we do in the invention business and our experiential entertainment and Future Lab studio. So we have a bullpen of creatives as well. So I learned how to marshal and amplify their powers with those individuals that we would hire inside the business. So I learned that from him too.
So what I've often compared entrepreneurs, you know, to superheroes in our own rights. We all have our own superpower. And I think it always, you know, you look at any superhero story and it always begins with realizing you have this power and you have the inability to control it. Huh. Right. And then, you know, someone comes along and teaches you how to harness it. And for me, it's funny. I say that's ADD. Mm-hmm. Like most people look at attention deficit disorder as this penalty, and I wouldn't give it back. Now, it took me forever to be able to harness it. I guess I was kind of like Cyclops mowing things down with his eyes everywhere he looked in some regards.
Now, glasses, would you?
So, and I've asked past guests this. I mean, what do you think your superpower is as an entrepreneur?
Oh, what a great question. That's a good question. I often think, I've thought about superpower, thought about gifts, right? Like how to refine a set of gifts. Some gifts are innate, some can be refined and amplified. I suppose my greatest superpower is I have the ability to zoom out to 30,000 feet and look at a problem set, a robot, a piece of software, code. I can zoom way out, and then also have the ability to get zoomed straight into the exact detail of, or the anatomy of a problem set, or maybe it's some piece of innovation that we're working on, or perhaps it's even on the company side building the business, to zoom out, let's say from a financial story perspective that we're giving to stakeholders or investors, and just zoom right down into the details. So that took me some time to be competent and good at. So I suppose that's one of them.
Yeah, I agree. I've known you for a while. And like, you know, for those of you listening, it's really exciting for me to do the top Kansas City startups, because these are my neighbors and peers in entrepreneurship. And many times the people I call on good days and sometimes on bad days, because sometimes you just need someone that you can relate to and to tell, maybe someone that's as crazy as you are on some days or as level-headed
as others.
I've
got some calls from you, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 You've had the good day and the bad day and a couple of the, like, okay, tell me if I'm crazy. Cause that's, I feel like any entrepreneur listening has made that call to several people. All right. So, you know,
what's yours?
My superpower. Yeah. Well, it's the ADD, but it's the refined version of it. Cause I have
hyper focus,
but also like hyperactivity in the regards that I have a motor that just doesn't shut off. So, you know, anyone that understands a lot about personality styles and strengths and weaknesses know that your strength and your weakness hold hands and walk down the street. So on some days that's like an incredible power. Like I can get up and do the things that I don't want to do at the times that I least want to do them, which some people just call self-discipline. I say that's drive. And then on sometimes you can't turn off the engine.
I had a couple of meetings this last week or so, I guess it was last week, with some key executives where, you know, when you have these business meetings and you're in discussion, you know, you start to develop a profile on how to do business with somebody. And I, speaking about these powers and what people are good at, you know, in the, one of the meetings, I had my identical twin brother with me,
he is very identical. And
yeah, we're mirror image.
In twinhood.
Identical.
Yeah. You guys look exactly. Yeah.
Mirror image. So what his superpower is that he's a very exceptionally good listener, and he listens differently than most people. He actively listens. And so sometimes I have him attend some business meetings to understand who I'm dealing with, because I'm so concentrated sometimes in conversations where his superpower, even though we're identical twins, is the listening super carefully to a conversation and or an individual or a group of individuals and developing a business profile on the person, how they handle conversations, stress and voice, the venting of anxiety, for instance. So he has a very unique ability to reach deep inside somebody's psyche and understand what makes them tick. So I suppose I do bring him with me at times when we hire people or when we decide to do business with companies or something. We, you know, kind of like a corporate witch.
You mentioned
not a witch, but yeah.
That's the ability to read people and understand like motivations or really anything is powerful. I wrote about some of that in my first book because if you can't
published, aren't you?
Yeah, barely. So we'll give you as many copies as you want on the way out. We're trying to get rid of them, but being able to understand what someone else's personality style is, it makes your ability to communicate with them you can be a lot more proficient at it. So I have another question. You mentioned being able to look at things from a 30,000 foot view. I would think that if strengths and weaknesses occupy the same boat together, that also, does that ever lead to you being overly analytical?
Good question. Yeah. One of the things I've noticed is as I'm getting older, is the ability to hyper-focus. That's what I was describing earlier with you. Most people on my team too have this really uncanny ability to absorb a lot of information at one time, almost like a big data pipe. Like Google Chronicle has a huge data pipe that you can throw all kinds of data at. It's almost like that these days with entrepreneurs and inside our business where I have super creative people working on all kinds of different things and how to harness focus for them to be successful. Because you, on one hand, you have to let them be creative. And on the other hand, it's almost like you have to create the target and guide them to the target, not micromanage, but inspire to, you know, it's not a straight line sometimes. It's really a windy road to the target. So I try to set the target and encourage and relate to my team members. They're all different types of people too, all unique personalities and abilities, you know.
Working with creatives, after nearly a decade in the music industry, I mean, I consider myself a salesperson, probably more so than anything else, but a creative in that regard. We've had that conversation, and it's a, hey, we're weird. You never know. And the thing that's the most challenging is, you know, that's the ability to turn on that creation and the creativity and the inspiration. There's not a switch that comes with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can't prepare for when it happens. We try to give a unique space to be creative, and starts with the culture, obviously, but then the location where they know they can come to. I mean, I understand telecommuting, but at our place, we've taken the time. I like this. It's like the place you have here now, this new place, which is rad, man, what you built here in KCK. But it's a location where they can come to, where they feel like they can become creative, even right down to the lighting, to the comfort, the tools to activate their creativity, whether it be computers or drawing utensils or big screens or different pieces of technology, ones that we invent or even bring in. I think that collaborative space is still very, very important. We have that too. So tools and location and curating the right individuals. Yeah, it all comes together in a creative, with a creative bunch, doesn't it?
Yeah, when I'm in that mode, I'll lock myself in a room.
You play any music?
I can. I mean, I don't call myself a musician because I know real musicians. So I play, like, do I listen to it?
Yeah, like when you, sometimes when you have to write something, you say, hey, write this. It's not like a book report where it's due by Friday. It's, you have to be in the right mood and the flow of, do you do a lot of writing now? I mean, I wonder, because I do more writing now than
three books later. I haven't written a whole lot. I'm kind of more specialized on talking at this point.
Where's your muse?
It's a lot easier. But I do, well, my muse is actually.
Do you have a muse?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, and I am very passionate about music. I'm a jam band guy. Yeah. I think I've talked to you about this. Give me like a 48 minute song with no words, and I'm like down with that, because it doesn't end, and I can get myself kind of, it's almost like in a trance. And I've actually,
yes, that's what I'm getting.
I'm in a very fortunate position because I'm friends with the rock stars that I look up to. It's a weird thing. So I actually get to share the sentiment with them. And I've done that. And actually it's, I'm sitting here in our studio, like surrounded by Humphreys McGee concert posters and stuff like that. Yeah. And you know, those guys have been a big guide. I think you might have saw some of my pictures this summer. I took my daughter to see them at Red Rocks. My 6-year-old daughter and I went row two at Red Rocks to a jam band show. And yeah, it was
a smart kid, by the way.
She loved it. But you know, so for me, that's my muse, and that can kind of put me in the space. The problem I have with the creative thing and any of that, even inspiration, creativity, it surges. And it's, I actually talk about that some in the book Balance Me, because it's like, it's almost like, you know, a top, like a kid's toy, like you spin it and it stays upright and you're only going to maintain it for a specific amount of time before it falls over and you got to do it again.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that can knock that focus off its axis. Like, and that's the thing, you talk about the creator mindset or the entrepreneur mindset. And if I have had, the thing that's been the best asset for me is as a wife that understands that's what I need to do. And she'll block for me. She'll make sure, like, I mean, I can tell her, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to go lock myself in my office for a little bit. And she just, at this point, over a decade later, she didn't ask why.
She loves you. And I have to tell you, this is interesting, very interesting conversation. I'm glad I came in here today, in the studio, not on Zoom or Google Meet. This is
true,
because I've been waiting to come down here. You know, it is very important for entrepreneurs to pick the right spouse.
Oh yeah.
In fact, you know, I remember when we got the startup team together, this is a great story. I'll be brief. I also work with my wife, who is highly intelligent and really, really have a perfect role for her in the business too. But I have to say, I remember in the very beginning of the business, we sat everybody down, including spouses. And we said, do you know what you're about ready to enter into here?
Yeah.
I mean, even though we had, let's say,
I did that with my wife before we got married. I literally
said, listen, you got to hear this out. You know, like this is going to be hard work. It's going to be every day. We're going to laugh. We're going to cry. We're going to, you know, maybe there's going to be all the whole cycle of emotions. And so picking the right spouse is like really important. So good for you. Good for us.
For me, that was so I've been married twice, and my first wife wouldn't have probably been a good fit for me as an entrepreneur, but both my wives have been named Jill. So it's kind of hard to differentiate to Jill too, as she'll refer to herself as. I mean, I literally, when we went before we got married, I mean, I told her, I said, you know, and I'm older, I'm 10 years older than my wife. So I was like, hey, look, I'm not going to change. Even if you really, really, really want me to, like, it's so, and I think that's a mistake that people make, you know, men or women, when they get in a relationship, is thinking that they're going to change the other person. The older you get, the more that circuitry is burnt in.
Don't change.
Yeah. And I was like, well, she didn't want me to. And then, you know, there's good days with that and there's bad days. Now, before we get into the rest of this conversation, a quick reminder that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, I normally say that at the beginning of the show, I'm going to get in trouble for not saying it. I've just like, anytime I get in the studio with my friends, oh God, it's amazing.
Good,
it's great. Just been such a journey. It's been, you know, we just did our 1 millionth service hour.
Wow, congrats.
Like we've been trying to wrap our arms around that. So that's 125,000 8-hour days.
Wow.
Like, wow. Jeez. Like, I mean, dude, like what, like I'm humbled and it's, And a microscopic portion of that's me. It's, you know, over 200 people around the world. If you want to learn more about it, go to fullscale.io. So
awesome website. I like that tool that showcases the proper hire. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you built all your own tools, huh?
That's it. Yeah. We built our own system to manage it. And, you know, after we got to 100 employees after a year, and we're like, okay, that's an interesting thing. You just talk about innovation. And if, you know, I think that there's a big difference between settling for what you have to work with and building something that you need to work with. So, yeah, that whole system you're talking about is a management platform that has increasingly made my life easy. Like my sales guy quit in July. And I said, you know what? I'm not sure we need a sales guy anymore. And everyone looked at me. They're like, who's going to make the sales? I'm like, the fucking website, man.
It's you
bringing them in. A gigabook is scheduling the appointments, and like
that's how you did it here too.
Managing podcasts. All of it, right?
Yeah,
right.
The automation.
I just and that's what I want to talk about next, because you know that's the, you know. So I'm glad we got to go down the superhero route, because I didn't want to get away from. I've always enjoyed listening to you talk about your experience at Marvel, and so many boys and probably far less girls were obsessed with something Marvel growing up. So I think it's really neat to be around people like that. Now, you know, with that, you kind of jump from that to the world of robotics. Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned having another, we don't have to get too stuck on it, but you were involved in some of the early phases of what are now things like Roomba.
Bravo. And,
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was a super, see, that was an interesting group too, because that was at a incubator called Idea Lab, a real incubator. And it was a super unique experience, because they assembled like the greatest group of minds inside that organization. And ultimately the cleaning pattern and the ability to localize a machine in a room with no GPS to navigate a space ended up being one of the core technology platforms that were developed by the company, and ultimately became embedded in the Mint, which is now the baseline for the Bravo robotic, the Bravo robot. It was a great run, and I'm so proud of that company for what they accomplished. Tesseract is not a consumer robotics company, however. We do more enterprise robotics, which is more, you know, well, what is a robot? a robot could mean.
That's a great question. Things, yeah, right? What is an actual robot? Because the thing that vacuumed the floor before you got here was a robot.
You better make sure that's a Brava or a new Roomba. That's not plenty of that.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Okay. So good. Yeah. Good.
And let's actually, I've been really impressed.
You got to get a test robot in here. One of mine in here.
Yeah. Well, I've tried. I've invited you. So we'll put that robot to work. But yes. I mean, what is a robot though? That's a good question. Like, what actually classifies as a robot?
I would say a machine or service that automates a certain set of functions that a human may need help or wants to replace. We're not replacing humans at Tesseract. Actually, our robots augment decision making, so more like a cobot, like a robot that assists a human rather than replacing a human. We've developed technology inside the company that reveals one of the robots we make is a smart space. We call it a Tesseract, which is, it is a room, but it reminds me of all kinds of movies that I've seen. But have you seen Interstellar?
Yeah.
So we built what's at the end of the movie, you know, where Coop flies in through the black hole and ends up in a Tesseract. A space of the future built by future humans. That's what we've built. Something that you can walk into that analyzes the past. Analyzes real-time information and to predict future events. And so we really hit a homer here. I remember talking about really crazy startup stories in my basement in the burbs. You know, where I remember when I lived in the burbs before I got out of there, in the burbs, in my basement on a dry erase board, we were mapping out our next robot. And this was at the start of the inception of the business. And we knew what we wanted it to do. We knew what we wanted to call it. It took 3 years to build that machine. So we think a robot is an environment. One of the robots we make in the United States.
Does a robot have to be a physical thing that you can touch? Because the description of automation or intelligence doesn't always exist in a physical presence.
Like, yes.
I mean, so
maybe we come up with a different name for a robot.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I've never really sat down to define what a robot is.
Yeah. So maybe the better way is to come up with a new term and define what that is. And that's the new robot.
Yeah, maybe. You know what I mean? I like cobot, actually.
Cobot. Yeah.
I mean, because there's so many things. Like if you look at whatever it is, the smart home, everything, the wave of all that stuff. I mean, those seem like cobots. Like you cohabitate a world and maybe they learn. I think that's the, so does Silicon Valley and a lot of people that make investment think that, you know, they're putting so much big money down on AI and machine learning. And most people have no freaking clue.
The generic terms.
Yeah,
right?
Like what that really means and, you know, how that works. There's, I mean, a lot to be said about it. Yeah. So maybe the cobot is, we have our photographer coming in taking a couple pictures of us. He loves it when I call that out. So, we publish it all here on Startup Hustle. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, I think that when it comes to, you know, AI, machine learning, all of that, it's so misunderstood.
I can tell you what we're doing with it.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I think what a lot of people misunderstand is the utility of it. Meaning, like what for the most part, robotics, AI, and machine learning are doing the shit that people don't want to do anyway.
Yes, yes, yes. So this is a super unique conversation here. Well, like for instance, we are innovating inside a couple of key different industries at the moment. We do quite a bit of work with the United States military, our brave men and women in the United States military. Super unique work as it relates to a future state of the military. And the other industry that we work in quite a bit is in utility and in construction. In the construction business, it took us quite a bit of time to navigate the industry, the lingo, for instance. And so, the construction industry is going through a metamorphosis. The worker is the workers becoming older, and you know, how do you extend training, or how do you automate certain tasks on a construction site to make things more efficient, more safe? We're working on that type of technology and robots to assist and to make the whole project super efficient compared against the budget. So we've been taking the time to navigate these problems that are true. True disruption is occurring. And so we've taken the time to kind of understand the industry and are working with very unique customers who see a future state. Some companies are still in a quagmire, are choosing to look the other way when it comes to audit the automation of time and attendance, location of workers and efficiency and health and safety. We're attempting to automate and assist in that industry. So we supply wearable robots called Prism. We supply software called Mosaic and environments to relate all the information. We call them Tesseracts.
I think the thing you were at my house and talking to me about Prism, and this was before it actually came out, and
yeah,
we can talk about it now, but
yeah, sure.
it really made a lot of sense to me because Prism's just this very small, it's like a button almost that you can wear on whatever you're wearing. And you described it to me as you said, Matt, picture someone building a 20-story building. And you have this thing's just a frame. There's no walls. There's no windows. There's really not much. And you're trying to figure out what floor I'm on.
Well, you want to understand. Yeah.
Made sense to me. I was like, wow, I've never really thought about that.
Yeah. What are they working on?
Yeah. What are they working on? What are they doing? Or maybe where can I find you? Now, you mentioned talking about automating things. I think my first real experience with robots was when I worked for Roland. So Roland, you know, one of the world's, the world's largest maker of electronic musical instruments. And they were using them in their factories. And I just like remember seeing how they were doing it. So, you know, they have people that are assembling musical instruments and they had all these, you know, they had these bins that was like a little wall of bins and they had a sensor. And every time they stuck their hand in, it knew that they were reaching in to pull a part out. So then the robotics actually would know when they needed more parts. Now, look, this was like 20 years ago, which in the world of this stuff is like 2000 years ago. And that was really cutting edge and innovative. And, you know, they had a little robot cart kind of came through and it gave them more parts and more pieces. And then they also did things like, and that just creates efficiency, you know, and not slowing things down. And then another one was, so one of the things that Roland's really known for is making pianos and keyboards.
Yeah.
So they had, I remember feeling so confident to tell our accounts like, hey, look, these things work 99.99% of the time. And I can tell you why, because they have these robots that would just sit there and play the keys like a million times each to make sure that they didn't break or that they, you know,
repetitive tasks.
That's the thing is what person wanted to do that? And would you even have a finger left after? Because there's 88 keys on a piano. That's 88 million strokes. I mean, first off, I don't even know how long that took. You know, hopefully it took a lot less time than it did to render a million hours of service.
Interesting discussion, because what's happening now with automation and a couple of key core technologies, I think that the pandemic accelerated the use of technology and heightened use of automated tasks. It was heightened by the pandemic, the use of telecommunication, not being in an office, setting up rules and, you know, digital infrastructure, that was all accelerated by the pandemic. So what's happening now is you're seeing a boom in robotics because the technology is getting low cost enough to be able to create solutions. So I'm excited about being at the right place at the right time with the right people.
I mean, that's the key.
I wouldn't call it luck. It's been time to do that.
You know, we've had this conversation too. I don't believe in luck. I mean, it was as early as the you know, Greek philosophers making statements that luck is nothing but preparation and opportunity at an intersection. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. I believe in that.
It drives me. I've had people, you know, and it's, I've maybe had a 2-year break from this because I think I'm like you in the regard that I love people and then sometimes I don't. Like, just the, you know, just
sick of you.
It's no, not quite that. Not quite. Well, maybe on some things, but you know, I it's funny. I don't miss going to big functions with 300 people in a room and trying to remember what I said the next day, you know.
Or, I don't know. I like that WWE and that suite, that full in the Startup Hustle suite.
That was the full scale suite. We can call the Startup Hustle suite. That is right. We did go, we did
last.
So yeah, we'll be firing that back up on January 1st, but you know, the communication with people and, you know, sometimes explaining what you're doing or how or what and why and when, and you talk about getting around the right people. And I mean, I personally have found that to be harder and harder to do. You know, when it comes to sharing with different people and finding, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, relating to people. And I think you talk about the pandemic accelerating technology, and then it also like created a bigger digital divide. I mean, my whole day, we were talking earlier about the full scale website combined with Gigabook is like doing the job of like, you know, the
full-time salesperson.
It's making my, well, no, I'm doing the sales, but yeah. The problem is I didn't want to do the 90% of the stuff that was before that. So that kind of automation is creating a hell of a lot of efficiency.
Shows a lot of forward thinking.
You know, we were talking about, you know, the, you know, AI and machine learning and stuff like that. What do you think is the most misunderstood part about that?
I think that most people don't understand that it takes real work in the very beginning to set up a data feeding system so that before any AI can make any recommendation, the data has to be enriched. It takes quite a bit of work on the ingestion of the data in the beginning, how it's enriched, how it's associated and organized. We're working on the ability for a human and an AI assist to relate very specific pieces of information, whether it's classified, unclassified, you know, person, place, or thing. It's a new way to associate and enrich information to be visualized by a human, organized by a machine, and the decisions that are made ultimately by a human are enhanced by a piece of software or an AI serving up many different choices for the human to make instantly. So that's what we built the Tesseract for. So we built the physical environment to be physically there, and then we virtualized it in VR and in with AR enhancement. So we believe that it's the human the human's powers are enhanced by, or the human intellect and the human decision making is enhanced by AI. And the tools, a room, certain tools in the room, collaboration with other people. They may be in different parts of the world. So we're very interested in this, to build these tools to make work super efficient and fast.
Well, that's important stuff. You know, it's
mouthful.
I do so many of the city's top startup episodes with Lauren Conaway, and I know,
oh yeah,
you know,
big fan.
I
of
know
innovator.
You know Lauren, and yeah. she always asks Jessica, who our producer, to
love Jessica
to give me the questions or the companies that are about supply chain logistics. Like, I'm not an expert in that, but. But one that I do find a fascination in it, you talk about like the things that need to be done and there aren't people to do it. And what one of the things that as we come into a post-pandemic economy, you ask me how Full Scale is doing. Well, Full Scale is doing great because there's almost 400,000 open IT jobs in the US that aren't fillable. Mm. And we have this massive imbalance in what people are trained to do and what people want to do and then what needs to be done. And I was thinking about, you know, Tesla and what they're doing with the 18-wheeler trucks, yeah. And battery powered and self-driving and whatever. And so much, you hear so much about supply chain problems right now. And if those things were out on the road, that supply chain would be free. Yeah, it would be freed up. So with that, the question I've got is, I mean, how do you speak? I've often been on this show quoting Warren Buffett and saying 9 women can't make a baby in a month. So can you speed any of this stuff up? Because I feel like it's human resistance that slows a lot of it down.
Well, listen, I think this is also an interesting discussion, because what we're attempting to do, we have a unique studio inside Tesseract called Future Lab, and Future Lab is chock full of industrial designers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, people that can draw, writers. I mean, it's an assembly of a very creative and very innovative bunch. And what we're considering carefully, beyond inventing our own technology and IP, is to carefully next year in 2022 to carefully choose 2 or 3 companies where Tesseract becomes their weaponized innovation group. I mean, so many people or so many companies that are working every day, they got 1,000 things to do. And if they just had this group that could ride alongside, where, you know, many companies have wish lists and desire to go to a future state, but don't have the minds to do it. We desire to build that relationship. So we are carefully choosing three different companies for Future Lab to become their innovation, their secret weapon in innovation. So we are marshaling resources to do that. You know what I found, though, in hiring locally, because we started Tesseract very specifically, all local investor money, all local talent, right? It's hard to find good people, and to curate the right group of individuals, it takes some time. We have a unique way we hire, though. It's not normal. We try a term out for a couple of months, like 3 or 4 months, in an independent contractor arrangement before we bring anybody to W-2, so we understand their skills and what they can do. So it's a different way of hiring these days, I would say.
Yeah, that's one of the, I've had that discussion with so many people about Full Scale, because they often don't understand our business. Like, we don't want you to have your whole team in our office. That's not how our success formula works. We want you to have local people. And then you get to the point where you run into that shit. Where are the people? Like, and if you want to just put it in layman's terms, like, you need people to saw boards and pound nails and mix concrete. And that's kind of, you know, I don't want to say it's that simplistic, because, you know, we interview hundreds of people to hire a couple. And mm-hmm. It's funny, because, you know, right now I've got a waiting list for clients and everything. And some people would say, well, maybe you just need to hire some of the people you're turning away. No, I'm not going to do it. We're not going to do it. It compromises our brand standard. And it, honestly, that's not, you got to get the right people, and not just people. And that's a challenge. And I guess it's probably a good time to mention that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. All right. So, John, you know, time flies here on the Startup Hustle podcast. Yeah. And, you know, we're here towards the end of our time. Now, we still have some time to talk about stuff.
Sure.
I end my episodes, and I say my episodes because I'm not the only host of the show. Make sure you tune in weekly and hear what Andrew Morgans has to say about e-commerce and Amazon brand acceleration. Also tune in for a weekly show with Lauren Conaway, who is the founder of and CEO of Innovator. Go to innovatorkc.com. You know, she just did the Innovator Awards.
I was a sponsor.
And thank you for
my pleasure. Really
thank you for joining Lauren. Me with that. I thought that was such a cool presentation. It
me
was
too.
I was so touched by so many how heartfelt.
Yeah.
So many of the women were from winning the awards that you will hear them as future guests. Cause I was like, let's get them in here. Let's talk about it. So now I say my episodes end with what I call the founder's freestyle. And, you know, you're in my boat. You are a multi company founder. We're almost the same age, if not the same age. And, you know, kind of been, I'm embracing this. I seem to, whether I want to or not, I am being thrust into this role of like, I'm now like the professor or like the old guy or something. So I get thrown into the advice role. So when it comes to founders and entrepreneurs in general, I mean, what's some of the best advice that you could give about all of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I found is, I'm in the CEO role now. What I found is, and what the piece of advice I would give to younger people who desire to be entrepreneurs, and it's not a life for everybody. It's extremely, it's a different life, I would say, different focus. But the piece of advice is to really master your delivery of communication between multiple types of groups. For instance, if you're the one person that can clearly communicate to creatives, artists, there's a very specific, very special way to do that, different than the ability to communicate with C-level executives that desire a different, they communicate differently in different sets of information versus engineers also communicate differently. If you can master the skill to be the great communicator to C-level creatives, engineers, and those individuals that work inside a realistic company, that is a super huge skill. And that would be the best piece of advice, to master communication skills with different styles of the workforce. Also, I would also recommend learning to read an income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow statement, because if you can't read those, the businesses in your business could be in real trouble, and mastering 90 days of cash.
reading financials at your business is just a different form of communication.
That's right.
I mean, it's financial communication, and then you talk about that.
There is a story around how to communicate financially, though, because you could be a really great storyteller for the business and for the tech and for the products. But the financial story, too, is one of the most important means and mechanisms to communicate. So to be the master of those styles is...
Yeah, I think that I think you did well said, and those are, there's so many companies and people that when it comes to mastering all of those, well, they struggle. I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to communicate to all different kinds of people. And you know what? On some days I'm fucking aces at it. And some days it's like, dude, go back to school and start over again. You know, it's like, you just got to keep trying. I think that so much about communicating with people in general is understanding the personality style that they are. I use this example a lot. My wife is not a big fan of public speaking. She's more on the introverted side, and that personality type requires a different approach pattern. And the thing is for people like me who are like very, very high up on the driven and type A scale, oh dude, you can go in and mow people over. And it's, you can really just like, I mean, it's like bowling pins, like take one down and the other nine fall with
crack.
Next thing you know, you've got a huge problem to deal with and all that. And like I said, on some days I'll do that well, and some days I don't. The days I don't do it well are the days that I'm not actually thinking about it.
And that might be an interesting invention on a robot side, or an interesting next level piece of technology is with robots. I would say robots that interact with humans. Maybe a really great invention would be the invention of how a machine ultimately communicates with the human.
Right. Well, it's, you remember, like you're old like me. So we had the first computers that came out. I remember floppy disks still being floppy. And I remember people were like, computers are so rude. Right. Syntax error.
I'll never forget negotiating some, this was a technology license to a big CPG company, very unique negotiators on the other side of the CPG company. I'll leave you with this. They literally, it was a very unique negotiating tactic. They said, at the very end at the negotiation, they said, well, we want to own the right for the robot to whistle while it works. Right.
Someone probably owns the right to that song,
but that's a soundtrack, right? Yeah. I mean, that could be any sound effect. So he was very, what he tried to do is throw off he said, we want to own the right for the robot to whistle while it works. And I'm thinking, this guy's really a very good negotiator. He's trying to say that if the robot beeps, talks, whistles, that's a sound effect. So he was describing, it was a very unique negotiating means. But maybe that's a great invention is in the future, how robots determine how to communicate with human. They look at you, they look at the face, they understand your temperature, where you're at in the house or the business. So maybe they tell a joke to you or something.
And your personality type can be determined. It's funny because it's your personality type's actually determined by the way you see yourself. That's like everything about it. Like I'm telling you, I took a deep dive into this for years, and I did it because I was having a hard time communicating with people. It started when I was in my mid-20s, and I was a salesperson, and I noticed I could always sell really well to people that were like me. Now, I remember I was working in the music industry, so and a piano, keyboard, and kind of stuff centric. So imagine a piano teacher. That's not usually what it, okay. When people meet me and they get around me for a little bit and they see what my personality is like, no one ever is like, dude, I bet you're a piano teacher. No, no one has ever said that to me in the history of me.
You have the patience to be a piano teacher?
Right, the history of me. So it's a little more introverted, but I couldn't figure out why. And I really did figure out why. And it was just that, if you take it all the way down to the simplicity of type A and type B, there's just different people look at data and information differently.
Totally understand.
So introverted people, they want more info. They want to know how you got from A to B to C to D to E to F to G, where people on the type A side are like, you know what?
Give me the terms.
Give me the bottom line. Where are we at? I don't care about the process. I don't care how the sausage is made. But it's true. So you have to shape your reaction and your delivery. It doesn't mean you have to change who you are or be fake. Right. You just have to be, you have to actually, it's all about self-awareness.
Totally agree.
Understanding I go through this a lot, John, in the Philippines, because there's a big cultural difference, a lot more humble and quiet. And I do have to take a different approach with that somehow, because otherwise it just like, I don't know, it's like you're showing up and just bossing people around.
You're a big fella too.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because that was another thing with the self-awareness. So for those of you that are listening, I'm 6'4 and I weigh 255 pounds today. And I got a big, loud voice. And I'm confident. And that mows some people down. And you got to be aware of that, and without sacrificing
who you are,
the confidence and the ability to be who you are. But really all it is that, okay, so it just might be a little bit like you can see it.
I took it down a notch.
I did. I took it down a notch and I'm calm and I'm not. And, I know you're listening and you can't see me, but I'm not waving my arms around and I'm unimposing. And some of it too is like, maybe just don't stand right up next to someone that's 2 feet shorter than you, because you're just feel like a giant. So anyway,
Change that approach up, would you? Once again,
with me today, John Bucard, the CEO and founder of Tesseract Ventures. You go to tesseractventures.io. If you're interested in watching my reaction video, that's both the preparation to the show and also seeing if John uses our new putter with a camera installed on it to win free t-shirts here at the Startup Hustle Studio. There you go. That's it. We got fire engines in the background kind of showing we're back on this. If you want to watch my reaction video, both for getting ready during the show and then afterward, get my takeaways, go over to Startup Hustle YouTube channel. It's a new thing we have just started doing. Hopefully you enjoy it. John, I will see you next time.
Matt, thank you for having me, man. What a great time.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it like we do it.